Welcome to the To Read List. I'm Bailey, and this is a podcast where I attempt to get through the 124 unread books on my shelf. With me, as always, is my friend Toby.
Hey.
My brother Andrew.
Ba-ba-ba.
My husband Dylan's the sound recordist.
Hello.
Did you guys notice 124?
Yes, I was about to compliment you. You actually have removed a book from your To Read List.
That's
You've
right.
gone down after 5.5 years or however long we've been doing this.
And it only makes it a little less impressive that you asked for the compliment.
And I'm like halfway through another book on the shelf, so pretty soon it'll be 123, so just so you guys know.
Yeah, but that assumes you don't buy more books, Bailey.
Yeah, you just jinxed yourself pretty bad.
Hey, someone who's good at math, can you figure out how long it would take 5.5 years to get one book down for 125 and what that would take?
It would take billions and billions of years.
Speaking of, based on the last episode, I've been thinking a lot about The Gift of Fear, and I've been using it as an excuse to not interact with people.
It's no, 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 no.
That's the thesis, right?
Yep. That's the pizza, right?
So I'm proud of myself. I'm down to 124. Did I get shame? I did. So am I at 125? I am. However, the shame I got was at Free Comic Book Day yesterday, and I got the graphic memoir Gender Queer, and I'm going to read that like in an hour. So it doesn't even really count. So.
It's not guilt-free comic book day.
Did anybody else enjoy Free Comic Book Day? I know you did, Dylan.
Yeah, and I got, besides all the free comics, which included a lot of Unicorn Crush and Pokemon and Encanto, like, that, I was so worried that they were not going to have comics for Maggie, and boy was I wrong.
They have an Encanto comic, huh?
Oh, yeah. And we went to 3 comic book stores. We usually give shout-outs to, like, Secret Headquarters, which is slowly rebuilding in Atwater Village, and it's doing great.
Not even that, Toby. This is a very niche thing, but I need you to know that Secret Headquarters, which is a comic book store that was in Silver Lake, it's moved to Atwater. It now has a second location called Top Secret Headquarters, and it is right next to the Echoplex, next to Triple Beam in Echo Park, which is right where Toby used to live. So,
oh man, that is some niche content that is pretty much just for me.
But I need you
really
to know.
Enjoyed it.
But it was funny when like, because I thought, because it had always been in this one place, and so I just plugged the name into my GPS, and I had to go to the second one because I asked him if he had Gender Queer, and he's like, no, but we have it at the other location, which opened 3 days ago. So I had to drive there, and at a certain point, I was like, the reason why I'm doing that is because I'm feeling guilty for taking the free comics without buying anything, but if I'm going to the next place, then they don't know, but why am I doing this? But I'm committed now. So that's my story.
Wow, you had a hipster guilt tour
exactly.
of Los Angeles.
Exactly.
Yep. And if you want even more hipster guilt, I got 2 graphic novels to add onto my list, including I Moved to Los Angeles to Work in Animation by Natalie Norgott, which is... Really...
What's it about? Just kidding.
apparently it's really good. Like, it's been getting like a lot of good reviews on animation boards, but also just like across the board.
Across the storyboard, you mean?
And then I got The Man in the Macintosh Suit by Rina Ayong, which is about, it's like a film noir about the Filipino community in LA in the 1930s.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, it was my jam, but it was hard because Maggie kept trying to read like, the graphic novels that I was getting to, and I had to say, like, nope.
Not that one.
Not that one.
Hooray. Did you guys do Free Comic Book Day? Does it exist where you live, or are you guys lame?
Wow.
Well, I feel like I can't answer that. I feel like I can't answer that question now.
Yeah, that's a trap. Yeah, I did not participate. It was not a good day for me. I was finally back in Woodstock and was doing a lot of yard work. So.
I guess this is growing up.
Andrew, were you reading... Eric Larson audiobook while doing yard work, because that's the most dad thing I've ever heard.
No, I mean, I have done things like that before. No, I was actually reading The Liars Club while I was doing yard work. I was all physical for Larson this time.
Do you have a piece of yard work that's your favorite to do?
Good question. I think the most satisfying is when a tree falls down and I have to break it down with like a chainsaw and split it.
Ooh.
Well, how often does that happen?
3 times in the last year.
Whoa.
It's only May.
You better watch out for beetles or whatever.
Our plot is 2 acres large, and it's mostly woods. So it happens not infrequently.
Yeah, Toby, it's literally called Woodstock.
That's how they stock up on their wood.
Wow. It's not like fun to do, but it is very satisfying. And then like of the more day-to-day stuff, I don't mind mowing the lawn. I think that's fine. So I don't really like stacking wood, and I don't like raking. I hate raking.
Yeah, everybody hates raking.
Andrew has a very favorite also indoor chore.
Organizing the dishwasher?
Yes.
Yeah, I love organizing the dishwasher. I've been finding this a lot in relationships with one male presenting person and one female presenting person. The male presenting person feels very strongly about the dishwasher. I do not want to generalize here, but it is like 100% that I have found this.
That is completely incorrect with me and Dylan. I'm always correcting his placement in the dishwasher.
Wow. So. Well, so maybe it is just like there's a 50% of the world cares about it and 50% doesn't care about it, and I was unenlightened just then.
Well, but I mean, you know, there's unused space. You got to move stuff around and utilize all the space.
But then I pack it too tight, and then you say, nope, we're not going down this road.
But anyway, Andrew, I'm glad you have passions.
Thank you.
Andrew, I'm going to back you up. I care about organizing the dishwasher, and Luis claims to care, but then when I look in there, it's a screaming nightmare. So.
It's also the same with Jillian's parents. as a way of prostrating myself to you, let me tell you a little bit about some ancillary shame.
Ancillary shame.
Ancillary Jillian's shame. Birthday last week on the 23rd.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Jillian.
Happy birthday.
And for her birthday, I got her a lot of books because she's been in a real reading kick. So I fed her addiction by feeding mine. And some of those I think I will also put on the to read list to use.
Sweet.
So
cool.
There you go.
Like which ones?
The two that I think are definitely going to make it. She has actually already read this one. She's read Court of Thorn and Roses. So that's going on. Mm-hmm. Got to see if that gets pulled to ACOTAR, because I think it's better than Outlander, but we could have another Outlander-like episode where I have to read it.
Oh. Andrew, but if you read that, then you have to read the next one.
Oh, don't worry. We now own all five.
Oh, great.
That have
okay.
been released yeah. in
cool,
that
cool,
series.
Cool, 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 cool.
That was
I've read the first
was
one.
The box set.
If you give him Mouse of Gabardon, he's going to want to finish the series.
Well, Gabaldon wrote Outlander, and I do not want to finish that series. Sorry, Outlander fans. The other one, which I'm surprised didn't lead conversation here, was that Bardugo has released a standalone book.
I know.
And we haven't even mentioned it. It is out, The Familiar. It's got a creepy cover with black painted pages on the side. Mm. Ooh, baby. I bought a copy of that for Jillian, and it is going on my to-read list.
That reminds me.
Whoa.
Since we last recorded, it was also Independent Bookstore Day, and I looked at that, and I wanted to buy it. But here's the thing. I have shame that I haven't had a lot of shame because I've been trying to save money. And these new these new hardcovers are expensive.
I know.
It's true. We'll get to that maybe in my review. Let's just say there's a new Larson popping off too, and I was tempted. And then, the only other thing that sort of happened notably in my book life in the last 2 weeks was I actually finally did it, guys. I used all the books I brought on a vacation.
Oh.
I know. I didn't finish all of them, but I justified the amount of books I brought, which was four for a 10-day trip.
That's pretty impressive.
Was it like a really happy reason? Like you had a lot of time on the beach, you know?
Well, you don't have to get into it, but let's say a member of our trip had COVID, so I basically stayed inside for 10 days.
Well, I'm glad.
That's how that happened.
That's satisfying, though. Four books. That's nice.
More than three. Less than five.
It's true. It was just I always bring too many, and this time I finally brought the right amount.
Good job. Well, before we move on, I just have to give some shout outs to Dylan and Ella, our previous guests, and Jillian, that the podcast they made, Candy Claws, won Best Comedy Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
At a local, what's it called? The LA.
The LA Web Fest.
Very cool. And like Ella, got to like accept an award and make a speech, and Dylan got to meet the guy who wrote Princess and the Frog.
Yeah. Jealous. So,
whoa.
So congratulations. Good job, guys.
Good job, Dylan.
It was very nice getting to meet other narrative podcasty people.
And Ella.
Yeah.
And then a lot of tabletop podcasts as well.
What's a tabletop podcast? Is that what we do?
It's like Dungeons & Dragons podcasts.
Ah.
Wait, was Critical Role there? You really have to tell me.
I didn't want to undercut it, but say that it's like there was a lot of big podcasts there. But
you won, so.
But we won.
It's like when I said we were the number one high school in Maine, and it doesn't matter that there's a lot fewer schools in Maine, you're still number one.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't matter. Well, congratulations, Candy Claws. Good job. Looking forward to season two.
For another podcast.
friend of the podcast, yeah. and also Dylan.
Yeah.
Part of the podcast.
Part of the podcast.
Also Jillian.
Also Jillian, true. Yeah.
Wow. Feeling pretty left out right now.
Well, Andrew, speaking of, you know, being a total dad, did you read a book this week?
I did read a book. I put on my bivocals and lightly fell asleep in a big chair while reading this book. I kept insisting I wasn't falling asleep.
I'm just resting my eyes.
But I also, in doing all that, read The Splendid and the Vile by Eric Larson.
Splendid.
Vile, vile, vile.
Splendid, splendid, splendid.
Pow, pow, pow. Here's a little teaser to get you ready for a review. Popular historian Eric Larson's The Splendid and the Vile transports readers to war-torn London during the early uncertainty of 1940 and into the newly appointed Prime Minister Winston Churchill's inner circle. Following the first year of Churchill's leadership and the worst of the air raids in the Battle of Britain, Larson mines lesser-used and more personal sources to paint an intimate picture of the legendary man, as well as the host of people supporting him. Larson balances the largeness of history with the humanness of everyday, knitting together a compelling tapestry.
Oh. You know what was a compelling tapestry? Was that log line?
Oh. To give you a little more context about the book, it is sort of a classic Larson situation. He's taking a historical event and looking at it both sort of broadly and closely. In this case, his focus is on Winston Churchill during the Blitz, which took place a little bit of a ways into the war. Basically, World War II starts in 1939.
What?
Initially, Germany is sort of blitzkrieging and trying to take over the surrounding countries quickly. Gets to the point where France has fallen. This is in 1940. Winston Churchill took power in early 1940.
Yeah, he made that speech. He made that speech to England where he was like, "You must give me power because what we have here is a classic Larson situation." Right?
He did say that. Yep, that's what he said. Mm. And so the book follows his sort of initial days in power, which then relatively early on in it is where the devastation of the air raids start. And so the book follows him there, and it follows the people around him, and it uses a lot of exciting sources, like one of his personal secretary's diaries, which he should not have been keeping, but he did. And his daughter Mary's diary, as well as contemporary accounts of a lot of people.
Andrew, have you seen the Joe Wright, Gary Oldman movie Darkest Hour? Because it sounds like Darkest Hour.
I'm a father to two lovely cats. Of course I've seen this.
Is it like that period though? Where he's like, or no?
I don't want to slam Joe Wright, but that takes some liberties with sort of timing. Dunkirk, which is what that is based, like that is like the English side version of Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk, basically. Mm-hmm. And they sort of frame that as a more climactic thing because that happens before the Blitz starts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I think that the movie isn't inaccurate necessarily. It doesn't tell the whole story because it doesn't like then say, okay, well then there was, you know, a year and a half of crazy devastation of air raids.
Gotcha.
More like Joe Wrong.
Whoa. And that was also like really early on in his prime ministership, like first few months.
Okay.
As also a father, I think in Darkest Hour, they do kind of touch on that, where like that's kind of the decision he has to make as well. Because he like that's the scene in the house where he knows like, if we do this, we're going to have to now survive the Blitz. And he like basically realizes like, oh, this is kind of the start of something really terrible is about to happen.
I remember watching the movie, but my main memory is he was taking a lot of baths. So.
Well, he took two baths a day at exactly 98 degrees Fahrenheit.
There you go.
Always, no matter what. And this is the kind of details that the Larson book, not the film that we're not reviewing, talks about.
You don't remember that shot when it's like him in the bathtub and it slowly pans over to the thermometer stuck in there? This is 98 like degrees. 90.
And next to it is Nick Lachey just being like 98 degrees.
Winston Churchill's bathroom diary, number 1,632, hot.
Sorry, Andrew. Review the book.
Yeah, so I might be misremembering the movie slightly, but I think that this one is more faithful historically and probably takes a little less poetic license in terms of framing the story. That's all
Which
I'll
for
say,
Eric
Joe.
Larson is saying something.
I apologize, Joe Wright. That's the story we're telling. Again, we have all these primary sources that have been available, but it seems like Larson is the first person to use a lot of them, which is an interesting sort of thing. And now let's go into some orcs and elves.
Mm.
You merely adopted the orc. As always, the balance between sort of the small and large of history in Larson's work is on show here. It's not quite as stark of a difference as Thunderstruck, where it is like the story of a murder contrasted with the invention of the radio, or The Devil in the White City, which I haven't read, but from what I understand is like H.H. Holmes, the serial killer, contrasted with the World's Fair in Chicago. It's not that much of a dichotomy, but it is like World War II, Battle of Britain, contrasted with the daily goings-on of Winston Churchill.
Is one the splendid and one the vile, or that they're just saying that's the time period, best of time, works
the splendid
times?
And the vile comes from a quote from Jock Colville, who is his personal secretary, who basically said he's never seen something as contrastingly splendid and vile as the beauty of London with the like horror of bombs going off in it,
yeah,
and devastation.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
That's
okay.
Where that comes from.
He said that after accidentally walking in on Winston Churchill taking a bath.
Wow. Never have I ever felt so out of control of a review. Now that there is a story about Winston Churchill doing a long meeting with FDR completely naked.
Yep.
I mean, I would prefer that.
FDR was here, naked, as you can see. But what's cool about that sort of dichotomy is you feel like you're getting the historical context. I feel like I know more about the London Blitz, the Battle of Britain, but I also feel like I know a lot more about these individual people and characters on like a personal level. So that's a cool thing that I don't think every history does. I think the good ones do, but this is like a good way to make it feel like you're not just reading a textbook.
Cool.
Nice.
And similarly, it's like it's a very readable history. It is sort of a breeze to read, despite it has pretty intense content and is over 500 pages. But it was not like no struggle to finish this for the podcast whatsoever.
Well, now I believe you less.
Well, I was trying to make fun of you for not finishing a book.
Oh yeah. See, it's already escaped my mind. It doesn't trouble me.
So what's your vials and what's your
splendids?
Well,
I have not finished my elves yet. Thank you
sorry.
Very much.
I'm so sorry.
Yes, I'll finish my splendids and then I'll move on to my singular vial, Curt vial. I've got my elves, my orcs, and my Curt. another splendid or elf is that I appreciated that more emphasis was put on people, how they remember, or even better, like contemporarily wrote about Churchill and the Blitz. Most of the sources are not Winston Churchill, or like things that he has said in retrospect, like trying to frame his version of history. It's like all people being like, this is what happened this day that I wrote in the diary at the end of this day. Like, it's not a lot of secondary sources.
Is Eric Larson like largely quoting from stuff? Or because usually he does like a lot of narrative history.
Well, right. But he never ever writes anything in a quotation mark that is not taken from a direct source as a quote.
Okay.
Like, that was not said. He like calls that out in his intro and it's like, I'd never do this and I don't do this. I know it reads like a narrative, but this has been...
I'm not being defensive. You're being defensive.
Yeah, it does seem like he maybe got some crap about it at one point and he's like, just to be clear.
No, I've heard that knock on him, why historians don't take him as seriously is because he tries to weave it all together to make it smooth.
They're just jealous of how much swag he has.
Yeah. Oh my God, you're so obsessed with me.
Yeah, I mean, so I can't talk about the like veracity of it and I can't talk about the like correctness of his historical method, but he does claim and provide sources for all the quotes.
Yeah.
And this one maybe was easier because these people were more popular and there were several like people who diaried every day in this feature that he got quotes from, things like that.
Nice. You're saying he brought receipts.
He brought receipts. He shows them in the back of the book if you'd like to look at them. And then a final splendid, like any good history, it sort of makes you want to learn more about the subject and the people involved. So like I've Wikipedia'd people such as, shout out to Lord Beaverbrook, Averill Harriman, Mary Churchill, and Jock Colville. And I plan to continue to do so.
Wait, can you say those names again, but in a Saturday Night Live voice?
No, I can't do this. I'm not your monkey.
Mary Churchill.
And so all this leads to my singular vial, my singular orc. And I don't know exactly how to go around it, but it falls a little bit into the trap of sort of like a great man theory of history, focusing so much on like the immense job that Churchill did leading the nation. And, you know, that's fair to an extent. But the consequence of that is the story becomes almost entirely about sort of upper class, because the sources that he has are either Churchill's family, or people who are like kind of all in the, basically in the aristocracy of England. He tries to get around this a little bit by using the sources that he has from like, they had this program where they had like regular people diary every day so they could get like a record of what people were feeling and like what the morale level was. and he has some other sources, but what's missing here is like more direct sources from soldiers, civilians, or factory workers, who are the people who are bearing the brunt of the consequence here, and the brunt of the work that was being asked of them to do. So that's not really a big part of it, even though there are some slight nods to it. But if what you're trying to do is paint a portrait of Churchill, you're going to use the people who are around him. So I can't really knock it too hard for that. I had a great time reading it. I will read more Larson. I will buy The Demon of Unrest, even though the New York Times sort of slammed it. And yeah, I think I'm going to give this one... I think I'm going to give this 5 stars. It's sort of a borderline because it's one of those situations where like, yeah, this is awesome. I had a great time reading it. Is it a book that I'm like, this is the greatest writing I've ever seen? No, but like I can't actually point to anything to knock it down. So it's probably like a 4.5 that I will round up.
Nice, nice. Good. Toby, I know we've covered him before, but do you have any facts on Eric Larson?
I do have some facts. And here we go. Because we've covered Eric Larson before considerably, I had to kind of search around for new stuff to say about him, but luckily he himself has written an alternative biography that you can read on his website.
Ooh.
So this is not your Penguin Random House clean version. This is like you buy the CD at Tower Records and your parents are like, what does this parental advisory mean? And it means it's advised that you buy it for me.
It's not a normal bio. It's a cool bio.
Yeah, I have abridged this heavily. This is in Eric's own words. To begin with, I was born in Brooklyn, like half the planet. Birth date, January 3, 1954. Can you feel the attitude already in this alternative?
I love it.
He's got some real spice in there. He's throwing some paprika. He's throwing some...
He's got swag.
I spent a couple years in Brooklyn, but have really only one clear recollection of being bitten by my upstairs friend slash neighbor, John 8. He does not return to that story.
John Haldeman.
I lived briefly in Central Islip and Massapequa, but mostly grew up in Freeport, Long Island, a suburb of New York City, and had 3 main pursuits: climbing tall trees, riding my bike to the far reaches of the island, typically without my parents' knowledge, and body surfing at Jones Beach.
Cool.
Shaka bra. At first, I wanted to be a New Yorker cartoonist. For a year or so during my junior high years, I sent my work to the magazine. I seem to recall my cartoons being returned within 24 hours, though surely that can't be the case.
Wow, he got extra rejected.
I want to see his cartoons.
I did have a high school girlfriend, Michelle G., who in fact shaped my destiny. It was because of her that I went to the University of Pennsylvania. She dumped me 2 weeks later. This was hard. I recovered. She undumped me. We dated another 6 months. Then she dumped me again, but I was happy. I studied Russian, learned to drink vodka from a real Russian prince. Again, no exposition there.
None needed, baby.
Fought acne by wearing underwear on my head to keep the hair off my face, and graduated summa cum laude. What is it? How do you say that? Summa cum laude?
Yeah,
right?
Summa cum laude. So what I'm learning so far, and I know we're only, you know, at his college years, but like, what you need to do is get famous enough that you can write a biography that calls out all the people that have wronged you.
Yeah.
My first journalism job was for the Bucks County Courier-Times in Levittown, Pennsylvania, a great spot to start my career. One day, they passed me over for a promotion I dearly wanted and hired a new guy instead.
John H. again.
It was John H., who's now married to my ex-girlfriend.
I shipped my resume all over the planet and got hired by the Wall Street Journal. The job changed my life and shaped my future in ways I can't even begin to describe. I tried as much as possible to avoid the main mission of the journal, which was to write business news, and concentrated instead on feature stories for Page One. My favorite, a story on video dating that caused Bob Woodward to launch an investigation of me.
But
again,
what?
No exposition. At some point, I grew tired of writing journalism. One day, the managing editor summoned me to New York to breakfast at Windows on the World in the World Trade Center, where I knew he planned to offer me a job as bureau chief in one of the paper's key bureaus. I told him no. Soon after, I got married, blind date of all things, and my wife and I moved to Baltimore, where I wrote a couple of unpublished novels, did some respectable freelance pieces, helped raise some babies, and wrote my first book, The Naked Consumer, about Winston Churchill, no, about how companies spied on individual consumers. I loved that book. No one else did. This was hard, but I was happy. One thing led to another, and now I've got 7 books under my belt with an 8th on the way. I live in Manhattan with my blind date wife. We have 3 daughters, all of whom are gainfully employed. I love to cook and play tennis, not simultaneously, though that would be interesting. Oh. I drink too much red wine. I like martinis and humor dry. I think Airplane is the finest comedy ever made, and I have a passion for dark, gloomy Scandinavian detective stories.
We get it. You're a dad.
Yeah, I'm a dad. I'm a dad. I'm a dad, dad, dad. As a friend once said, the Scandinavians really know how to kill people. That is the true final line of the alternative biography.
There's just so much there.
I forgot he's New York now. For a while, he lived in Seattle also. So I was like, Jillian, your friend Eric Larson. But now he's all of our friends.
Now he's your friend.
Yeah,
he's not my friend. I don't live in New York. So the rest of this is from an interview with Lancaster Online. And the interviewer is Mike Andrelzik. Mike asks, so much has been written about Churchill. Did you learn anything new? And I probably
no
delivering that in a more antagonistic way than he did, but I enjoyed doing it that way. Larson answers, one brand new thing was Mary Churchill's diary. She, as far as I'm concerned, made the book. I was so lucky to get access to that diary. Prior to my seeing it, there had only been one other researcher who'd been given that opportunity. I'm not sure who that person was or what the context was, but I'm sure they didn't use it the way I used it. I wanted Mary Churchill to be a freestanding flesh-and-blood character. She was 17 when the action starts in the book. She was a smart young woman, really articulate, a great observer of big events, but also a girl that liked to have fun. How often do you find a diary that you use and quote for a book where someone talks about snogging in the hayloft, you know? I died and went to heaven.
Okay.
And just to, like, underline that, she really is... Like, her diary underpins a lot of it, and it's really refreshing to have a non, like, dude working at 10 Downing Street.
Yeah. I do think it's funny that he's a historical researcher, and he's like, I don't know who else had access to this historical document. I don't care.
Suck it, Stephen Ambrose.
Does he explain how he gets the access? Is he just like, well, you know I've got swag, so they called me up? Or, like,
he got permission to use it from her granddaughter or her daughter.
Mm. Okay.
I think it's her daughter, actually.
Because he's the Lars man.
All right. Mike asks, how many books do you think it takes for you to read to write one? And Eric answers, complete books and fragments? Hundreds. In The Splendid and the Vile, let's see, I learned something about the construction of one of the government buildings that got destroyed. And then you sort of have to read about London and the architecture of Westminster and so forth. It's a constant Tarzan-like process from rope to rope to rope and from book to book to book. Hundreds of books. And here's a final little sign-off. Mike asks, diaries have seemed to be invaluable historical records for your work. Have you ever kept a diary?
Ooh.
Eric kind of twirls his hair around his finger and he says, I'm a fairly compulsive journaler in terms of ideas for books and passages for books. I don't spend so much time talking about routine events in my life, but I've kept journals for years. I hope to God nobody ever publishes any of them. I'd be kind of ashamed because they're nowhere as articulate as Mary Churchill's.
Oh, okay.
A very clever and nice compliment to Mary Churchill and a nice sign-off from our boy, Eric Larson.
Well, that was lovely. Good
interview. End of Marvel movie. Eric Larson will return.
In... Thunderstruck 2, Thunderstricken.
There's a cut scene of H.H. Holmes just like building a house. thank you for those great facts. And Andrew, thank you for your review. That is The Splendid and the Vile by Eric Larson. 5 stars.
Woo! Bailey, I think after all that, we could use a little R&R, rest and relaxation. Well, did you read anything that maybe could provide that?
I mean, I guess I did because I read Beach Read by Emily Henry.
We will read them in the beaches. We will read them on the fields.
There we go.
So, yes, I read Emily Henry's book, Beach Read. For those of you who don't know, Emily Henry is a very well-regarded contemporary romance, or you could say women's literature.
The Eric Larson of her fields, if you will.
Honestly, maybe. Like... seriously, like a lot of the things that Andrew was saying in his review parallel what I'm about to say in my review. So like, I guess I'm an Emily Henry fan. Who knew?
We all saw that coming.
How dare you? It was a really big surprise for all of us. We never knew that the girl was going to end up with the guy in the end. The Bailey was going to end up with the book in the end. So she is known for these really fun romances with a little bit of spice, just a tiny bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they are in general sort of at least ancillary to the book world.
We are loving the word ancillary recently, aren't we? We're just it's throwing it around.
This one, for example, follows two writers. One of them writes romance books. Her name is January. And she sort of inherits this house from her father, whom she learns at the funeral had a secret life. And she inherits the house, and she's trying to, you know, sell the stuff, get rid of the house, but at the same time, you know, hit her deadline for finishing her next romance book. But her father's secret life revelation makes her doubt love. You know, she's like, love doesn't exist because my dad was a jerk.
Secret life? You mean like secret family?
Well, he was having a long-term affair.
Oh.
That's not a spoiler. I think the first sentence is like, I met the love of my dad's life at his funeral or something like that. Anyway.
Whoa.
So she's got this beach house. And then next door is another beach house. And who should live there?
Her dad's ghost?
Her name was April.
No.
Is it a boy writer? Is it Eric Larson?
It's a boy writer.
Is it Eric Larson?
Well, okay, it's a boy writer whose name is Augustus, but he goes by Gus. But you know, it's very like Jonathan Franzen-esque writer. Very literary, very masculine, very arty, well respected.
Very controversial.
Yeah. And okay. He is also trying to write his current novel, which is based on like a death cult, and it's like pretty depressing. But would you know what? He and January went to the same college and they were rivals. But at the same time, they had a little bit of romantic tension and they reconnect. But they were both sort of the best in the class, but very different genres. And she kind of always like was like, oh, I hate how smart and hot he is. I hate him, you know. But they had one like, you know, moment of chemistry before graduation, never saw each other again, reconnected in these beach houses. So you'll never guess what happens next.
They still hate each other and then nothing and they don't interact.
They build a rocket.
Oh, I forgot the biggest thing. Okay, so they meet, they were both having writer's block, and they decide, how are we going to get out of this? What if we each switch?
What?
Yeah. So he's going to try to write a book with a happy ending and she's going to try to write a book with a sad ending. And he is going to take her on all of his tours and like research trips for his death cult book. And she is going to take him on dates from like rom-coms.
This sounds like a really fun book.
Yeah.
It sounds so fun.
It is. And then as it says on the back, everyone will finish a book and no one will fall in love. Really? But do you think so?
It's the first rule of fiction writing. Don't fall in love.
So
we've said it so many times in this podcast. The first rule of almost everything is don't fall in love.
Don't fall in love. So that's the book. You can already tell from the premise that it's going to be fun. I was telling these guys that like I picked it up the day after we recorded. I was like, I'll just start my next book. And I read 80 pages in one sitting before falling asleep. So like I was very into it. It was a very quick read. I have discovered, and I don't know if it's, I don't know, something I've discovered in myself or something like people are talking about more, but I just like, I'm devouring these romance books. Like they're just so, so diverting. And there's such comfort in knowing the tropes and knowing like with an action movie, mm-hmm. with a rom-com, you know what's going to happen. You know, it has to be a happily ever after. You know that like, you know, the grumpy and the sunshine are going to end up coming together or the, you know, friends turn lovers, whatever. And so even though you know what's going to happen, it's cozy. I really enjoyed reading the book. I only have tiny quibbles about it, which I'm just going to share now because overall my review.
What are quibbles? I only know about orcs.
Or vials.
Or vials. Nick Vile, who's a bachelor.
Yeah.
So my Nick Viles are just that, you know, sometimes this is a common trope that I don't like in romance. But I get it, which is the conflict would be solved if you just talk to each other. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah.
She's having all of this drama with her deceased father's former mistress, and she refuses to talk to her. I'm just like, what? You should just hear her out. Like, you don't even know what the deal is. And like, I just feel like it's manufacturing conflict to make the book longer. I just feel like in real life, I don't know, maybe there's a more creative way to do it. Similarly, like, you know, he can't like me. It's like, clearly he likes you, but I'm still into it.
Yeah.
With that said, like, I was really into it. really speeding through it. I get to like, there's like this really hot like makeout scene and you're like, nice. And then eventually it gets to like the one spicy sex scene and then it just kind of slows down after that. So that was one little orc, but that was just maybe for this specific book because it then they're tying up the family drama aspects. Like they both have these sad pasts and I'm kind of like, okay, but go back to the love stuff.
Good.
And then
Bailey's in the background just mashing her two Barbie dolls together and be like, kiss,
kiss, kiss, kiss. I do like the idea of like a guy that you secretly had a crush on in the past actually had a crush on you the whole time too. Spoiler. That's fun. I have to tell you guys something that I don't like that happens in books. And I want to know if you guys don't like it either. This happens all the time in books or in movies where two characters are sitting down and they're getting to know each other. And they're like, hey, what do you think that couple is over there? I think she's on the run. And like they imagine the lives of the other people across the bar. Do you know what I'm talking about? Don't like that. I don't like that. And they do that.
Really?
It's a bit played out. Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it, but I don't like ever feel like, oh, that's awesome.
I hate it.
Yeah.
I actively hate it.
Very strong opinion, Bailey.
So this is all to say, obviously I sped this through this book really quick. I was really into it, but I am going to give it, it's between, like Andrew said, a 4 and a 5. I'm going to go 4 with this because after I finished reading it, I went on an Emily Henry kick.
No.
And I utilize on Spotify, you get 1 free audiobook per month. And so I read the audiobook for Funny Story, which is her more recent book that just came out. That one I liked more. That one I'd give 5 stars. So it's like, I like her as like Andrew was saying with Eric Larson. I know I like her as an author. Is this my favorite one of hers? Probably not. Still really good. I like Funny Story better. I'm also currently reading Book Lovers, which was also on my list. This is like a grouchy editor and a grouchy literary agent. Anyway, so that one is, I'm going to finish soon and then I'll be down to 123 books. So all this to say, I love Emily Henry. I have also read her other two, this is separate, but Happy Place and The People We Meet on Vacation. Those I like to find. So far, Funny Story is my favorite and this following it, and then we'll see about Book Lovers. So Emily Henry fan, except when she talks about people watching. Yeah. Boo. The end. Happily ever after.
Nice.
Well, Toby, do you have any ancillary facts?
I do. Actually, no, my facts are more directly related to her. They're not ancillary. So, Emily Henry. You know what's interesting? I just realized this, but it's kind of a thing I've been noticing in much more recent authors, is that their, like, bio stats are way harder to find. So, like, where exactly she was born, when exactly she was born. You could probably find it if you really dug. But it's so interesting that, like, older authors, it's like they were born in Oak Hill Hospital on August 3rd, 1942. And this, you know, if you do some casual Googling, which is pretty much the extent of the research that I do, you just find out that Emily Henry is an American author who's best known for her New York Times bestselling romance novels, Beach Read, People We Meet on Vacation, Book Lovers, and Happy Place.
Okay.
So
okay.
I can tell you that she attended high school in Cincinnati, Ohio, and then Hope College on a creative writing scholarship with plans to study dance. She completed a writing residency at the now defunct New York Center for Art and Media Studies, part of Bethel University. She came back to Cincinnati after her college. She currently lives and writes in Cincinnati and Kentucky's Northern Ohio River region.
Go Bengals.
She did a couple young adult novels before she switched to adult literature. Her debut was called The Love That Split the World, and that was published in January 2016. She did several more young adult novels that did fine, but nothing, no great shakes. But then Beach Read came out. It was her first adult novel that was published in 2020 to widespread success.
2020?
Oh, I didn't realize this was so recent. Yeah.
She's knocking him out.
Bailey, does it surprise you that this is her first one?
It does, specifically because I knew she'd written a lot. I didn't realize that the first one was 2020. That's so recent. But a lot of the subject is like that she's a romance novelist. She's written, I don't know, let's say 4, and she has to write another one, a fifth one, and she's having writer's block. So it's weird that this is the first one. You know, I guess I assumed that it was more further down.
Well, this is her first adult novel. I mean, so listen to this. This is, that came out in 2020. People We Meet on Vacation came out in 2021. Book Lovers is in 2022. Happy Place in 2023. And Funny Story is out in 2024.
It just came out like last week.
Yeah. So, and then before that, she was publishing Young Adult, which infamously has a really strict release schedule. So I think maybe by the time she wrote this one, she was no stranger to writing on a deadline and maybe the stress that that entailed.
I guess so. I guess I just knew that she did that, so I just assumed it was later. Very cool. Okay.
Boom. As of March 2023, so this is an old stat, but still impressive, she's sold more than 2.4 million books. Jeez, pretty impressive.
That's cool.
The rest of this is from an interview with London Magazine, and the interviewer is Bryony Willis. Bryony asks, Beach Read explores themes of love and family. It's fresh and well-paced, and its characters are beguilingly complex. Tell me a bit about your writing process. Here we go. It's not exactly where do you write, but it's close enough. And Emily answers, I tend to be inspired by place more than anything. It's usually the first thing I'm excited about. I only know a couple of writers which feel the same way, but a lot of the time I have a setting in mind before character or plot. I think about gothic and horror novels where setting informs the kind of story that should take place there. And it's the same with romance. It's what will this place bring out in a certain person?
Rebecca?
With a contrast between this beautiful, relaxing place and a darker history from the main characters. When it came to Beach Read, I knew I wanted to write a book set on the shores of the Michigan Lakes. They're huge and super beautiful. They look like oceans from a lot of vantage points and are idyllic as far as American beaches go because they're more of a regional destination, so there's not a lot of tourism and crowdedness. So I really wanted to immerse myself in a story that took place in that setting. That was the starting point, but the problem was I had no idea beyond that. I didn't have characters or a plot or a problem. It took shape because I had writer's block, and I couldn't think of a single thing to put my characters through except for that. Also, I tend to, like the protagonist January, write very quickly and very badly. I am not afraid to write a terrible first draft. In fact, it's very comforting for me to finish a draft, no matter how bad it is. I think I might have taken somewhere between 3 to 5 weeks to write a very bad first draft for Beach Read. I just let the ball of momentum fall down the mountain and carry me with it. After that, it's a lot more work because it's not a book. It's just a bunch of dialogue and tidbits of description. But I usually have an idea of where the book wants to go naturally, and then I'm able to rewrite it.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice.
Are there any other personal experiences that inspired you to write Beach Read? Before publishing women's fiction, in quotation marks, I published young adult novels, which tend to get a similar reputation to romance novels. I definitely saw some genre snobbery. Sometimes people condescended me and made assumptions about how I felt about my own work. After I sold my first book for teens, I remember having a conversation with a friend of a friend who asked me about my book. I started describing it, and he said to me, whatever pays the bills, right?
Whoa.
I think that line actually made it into Beach Read. I was so caught off guard that I didn't really challenge him at the time. I just sort of nodded along and then later thought about why he thought I didn't love what I do or why he thought I had lowered myself in some way. These are genres that are dominated by women. Women are in the editorial process, the writing process, and the reading process. And I think that has something to do with the way they are treated. People look at them and think of them as sillier and lighter, less important, very commercial, and not necessarily art. Yes, there's commercial work in all these genres, but there's literary work too. The line between those two can be so flimsy, there's not even a great way of explaining what makes something literary. Romance is treated like a guilty pleasure, and in the last 10 years or so, I've asked myself a lot of questions about guilty pleasures and why I'm made to feel guilty for enjoying these narratives.
I love that. Yeah. Cosine.
And the final sign off here, fun question probably for Bailey, which is your favorite chapter in Beach Read?
Ooh.
And ooh. Emily answers, I love the book club scene with January's purse wine. Yeah. It was very fun to write. Overall, the book doesn't read like a typical rom-com because it is a little bit more understated and a little bit more serious. So I loved having that one scene that was just kind of slapstick. Mm-hmm. I feel like every once in a while, you have a moment that seems straight out of a comedy, or everything feels like it's falling into place to make the scenario as ridiculous as possible. So it was also really natural to write.
You guys will never guess what the purse wine is. It's wine that she has in her purse.
Is it wine made out of purses? Yeah. Well, that's Emily Henry. I feel like maybe we'll be hearing from her more on the podcast.
Just Bailey doesn't read everything before it gets chosen.
Yeah, I know.
I was going to say maybe not because I've got one more to go and I'm halfway through it. So I don't know.
I mean, I bet she's coming out with a book next year. Yeah. So
she might come out by next month. So,
Sure. Nice. Well, I love that. Emily Henry. Emily Henry, 5 stars. This particular book, 4 stars. Check out Funny Story. 5 stars. Andrew, do you have any fun games for us?
Yes, I do have a game this week. And it comes out of sometimes you're reading these histories and they're real dark. You know, bad things are happening all over the world. You don't want to just be living in that all the time, do you?
Vile things.
Sometimes you want a little beach read, something easier to read. So what I've done here is I've put together, the game is called The Splendid and the Splendid. And what I want you to do is I've made a list of 9 books, and they're sort of each kind of intense books. And I want to know how you turn them into a beach read and make them real easy and breezy and a fun thing to read on vacation. The way it'll work is all 3 of you can play. I want to use all 9 of these books, so you'll each get 3 answers, but no one can overlap. So we'll do like a snake draft style thing where it'll go Bailey, Toby, Dylan, and then Dylan, Toby, Bailey, and then Bailey, and then we'll reverse it so Toby gets to go first. Okay?
Cool. Yep.
Amazing.
Are you clear on what you're trying to do?
Yes.
Yes.
I will award a winner in each round. If there are 2 particularly excellent candidates, I may give a half point to someone who gets like, who I feel bad not awarding to. And everybody could get at least a half point each round, but there will be someone who wins each round. All right, so here's the list of 9 books. Hopefully you are at least familiar with each of them, but you know, you do get to pick. So there could be a situation where someone is rewriting one that they have not read or know nothing about, but hopefully we can avoid that.
Okay.
All right, here's the list. The Painted Bird, A Little Life, Crime and Punishment, Wuthering Heights, Hamlet, A Farewell to Arms, Gone Girl, Blood Meridian, Normal People.
Okay, so I go first?
All right.
Yeah, you get to go first.
Well, okay, I'm going to do A Little Life because you know I'm going to do A Little Life.
Boys. I knew you might.
All right, so A Little Life follows 4 best friends from college, right? We've got Jude, we've got, I forgot the other names.
JB, Willem, and Malcolm.
Thank you, Andrew, and your memory. And in A Little Life, these guys go through some stuff, you know, and it's very, 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 very sad. Very, very sad. So in this version, it's not so sad. These guys are all, you know, starting off with like stuff going on in their past, but their friendship just brings them together and they have a lot of fun. And in the end, maybe 2 of them fall in love. Who's to say who? And nobody dies. The end.
Okay. Mm.
You could just say, I cut off the last 200 pages of the book.
No, it's sad from the beginning.
All right. Toby, what would you like to do? And if you ever need a refresher, yes, I'm not going to list them every time, but like if you need a refresher. Let
me know. Yeah. I'm going to claim Normal People.
Oh.
Normal People is a story of 2 young people growing up in Normal, Illinois. They are happy and well-adjusted. They have a very public, very charming high school romance that's not secret at all. They go to separate colleges, but they exchange love letters all the time. And they get back together and have a wonderful life together. And then they have a Dalmatian plantation where they have a bunch of Dalmatians who can roam.
So there's no conflict.
That's the end of the story.
Cool.
Beautiful.
Love it.
Dylan?
I'm going to take Hamlet. But instead of focusing on the really depressed prince, I mean, he'll still be there, but I think I'll actually just focus on his 2 friends, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. And that way,
okay, Tom Stoppard,
and they'll go on their own little wacky zany adventures and talk philosophy or like get into
this already exists.
I don't know what you're talking about. Have some fun conversations, like a few laughs. It's going to be like a buddy road trip comedy, and it's going to be called Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Friends.
That is Tom Stoppard, right?
Oh, that's pretty good. Yes,
I've never heard of Stoppard. I've never heard of that. Who's he?
Pretty good.
Andrew.
All right. So we're only awarding 1 point for this round, and it goes to Toby. Oh. Congratulations.
What? Hey.
My idea was so original, though.
Because Dylan, I can't reward that behavior. And Bailey, I don't think you changed it enough.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I don't want to change Little Life because I love it. Okay.
That's fair. I'm just saying.
I was against Dylan's until he got to the punny title, and then it made me laugh, and I was afraid he was going to win it.
Can me and Tom Stoppard split the points?
No.
No. Round 2, Dylan, you get to go first. The remaining choices are The Painted Bird, Crime and Punishment, Wuthering Heights, A Farewell to Arms, Gone Girl, and Blood Meridian.
I'm going to do Gone Girl. And it's a story about a man and his missing wife. as they send love letters to each other, and he reads his diary about how much he really loved him and how great of a husband he was, and he realized how much he misses her. And at the end, he finds out that she was actually alive the whole time, and they get back together, and they have no problems whatsoever.
Mm. Is this still called Gone Girl?
Yeah, because she's gone, and she's a girl.
Gotcha, gotcha. Toby?
Okay, I'm going to go with a book that I've never heard of and whose plot I don't know, which is The Painted Bird. And it's about a man who creates decoy birds. He's like he's a woodsmith, and he paints them, and they're very lifelike and realistic. And then he falls in love with a local birdwatcher woman who becomes horrified when she learns his secret, that he's like helping this industry that hunts birds. But then he gives it up for her and ends up painting the birds that she spots instead, and they have a happily ever after. Is that close to the original plot of The Painted Bird? I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, The Painted Bird is by Jerzy Kosinski. It's about a boy running away from the Holocaust in Poland.
Okay, yeah.
And it's just a parade of awful things happening to this boy.
So, sorry, I'm doing Wuthering Heights, which I'm retitling Running Up That Hill. And Wuthering Heights is the story of two people who grew up together. One of them, her name is Kate Bush, and the other one's name is Big Boy. Is that his name?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
And they grew up together on this, like, really weird, you know, moor, let's say. It's just called the moor, but it's a neighborhood in South London. Anyway, so they grew up together. But
Atlanta.
Tumultuous relationship. But, you know, they really do love each other. And the thing is Kate Bush becomes a really famous singer. And Big Boy, he hears her songs, like Running Up That Hill. And he just, like, it's his favorite song. And he jams out to it as he's riding on his bike. And then they reconnect at a concert. She sees him and she's like, I'm going to marry you. And then they get married on stage. And then, because it's like Marry Me with Owen Wilson. And then one of them becomes a ghost at the end. But happy ever after the end.
Nice.
All right. I'm going to give a point to Bailey for that round and a half point to Toby. So, Dylan, you've been eliminated from this game. You cannot win.
Yes. In a way, that's victory itself.
I think he has, to do one, though. Yeah.
Yeah, see, the details are what's giving the wins here, and that's what I think we're missing from your answers. Toby, I actually believe your book could be a real thing, so that's why you get the half point.
Thank you.
All right, so Toby's leading at 1.5-1 for Bailey and 0 for Dylan. Final round, the options are A Fail World to Arms, Crime and Punishment, and Blood Meridian.
Okay, Blood Meridian is Brokeback Mountain, but the lead is the kid and his older, more experienced lover, the judge.
The kid is not a child, I believe.
He's not a child. You're right. In Keep You Happen. He's more like a young man. Okay. So we're gonna retrofit that. The character's name is the young man of legal age. And he's in a relationship with an older, more experienced man, the judge. And they roam the desert and they look at lots of beautiful scenery that's vividly described. And they have a great time and experience each other in new ways. And it's a great racy.
And there's no violence.
All right. Bailey, because you have a chance to win, I want you to get a chance to pick second.
Okay.
That's fair.
I'm going to pick Crime and Punishment because I've never read Farewell to Arms and I don't know what it's about. And I'm going to make some puns about somebody losing their arms. So Crime and Punishment. Okay. Here's the thing. There's this guy and his name is Ross Kolnikoff.
Oh, wow.
And Ross Kolnikoff.
You could just give me the point now if you want, Andrew.
No. This could go strong.
Ross Kolnikoff, you know, he's just finished school. He's living alone. He's in his new adult phase. And one day, he just wants to do something crazy. You know, he's just like, what if I just did something crazy? And he sees this, like, really pretty girl. And he follows her to her apartment. And she's like, oh, my God, what are you going to do? Are you going to murder me? And he's like, nah, I just like you. And then they start a romance. But then all of a sudden she disappears and he spends 2 weeks wondering, what should he do? Should he tell the cops? Should he not? And then he tells the cops and they fall in love.
Him and the cops?
Oh, no, her, because the cops help him find her because she was just stuck in an elevator somewhere. And then they fall in love.
I feel like I just got a co-writing credit on this by saying him and the cops.
Dylan, would you like to do Farewell to Arms real quick before I award this point? Because Dylan could also play spoiler here.
That is true. Because Farewell to Arms is the ambulance driver one, right?
Yeah.
So it's about a young dashing guy who drives ambulances in Italy, right?
Yeah, I thought so. I thought it was World War One, the Italian front in World War One.
I don't think we can tell you.
Okay, you're probably right.
He drives an ambulance in Italian World War One, but here's the thing. He's the best ambulance driver around. He can be played by Tom Cruise. And he drives really well when he's listening to music, because that's his whole thing. So
Baby
he has
driver.
I've
never heard of that before. So he listens to music, and so it has like a really cool soundtrack. But then he meets a really hot nurse, and they go into this crazy like 120 page long car chase, and then they end up getting together in the end.
And does he nice. She say like, your name is Tom, T-O-M, Tom
Bambino Driver?
Just Baby Driver.
All right, for all of you who forgot the film Baby Driver, there you go.
Oh, Bambino Driver just stole the point from me.
No, it didn't, Toby. You get the point. You win. Not yes. close. Congratulations.
All right.
Bailey, you can't make a romance where it's about a man following a woman.
Why? Have you seen the show You? Thank you for that game, Andrew. Sorry that you didn't
thank
like
you,
my
Andrew.
Raskolnikov joke. Yay.
Wonderful game.
Congratulations, Toby. Now, Dylan, it's time for her to ruin our lives.
Yeah, Dylan, it's time for you to come out of your... I just keep thinking about the judge as a romantic protagonist, and I can't do it. it's time to come for you to come out of your cage, Dylan. And it's time for you to pick books at random from our shelves. It's time for The Choosening.
The Choosening.
Gotta pick
the
choosening.
Books.
The Choosening. Ugh, I'm sorry, guys. That was bad at that game. I mean... It's just choosing sad books. It's kind of my weakness. Like, I'm usually really good at everything else except that one thing. You could say it's my Achilles heel, my number 54, Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller for Andrew.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh.
Andrew, I hear they were like really good friends.
What are they, friends? I'm really excited to read this book. It's supposed to be great. We've already read Circe on the podcast. I am not scared of this book, which is always a good way to come out of The Choosing.
That would have been another one for the game. Make that into a beach read.
And weirdly enough, one down from like the Splendid of the Vile. So that was very confusing. Well, and then Bailey.
Yes.
Actually, I don't know why you're worried. This has actually been a really good recording session. I mean, we've had great reviews, great games. I mean, it's definitely number 75, The Most Fun We Ever Had by Claire Lombardo.
Ah, I'm going to be real with you. I bought this book like years ago when it was on all of these like, I don't know, Instagram lists or whatever. I don't remember what it's about at all. I know that it has leaves on the cover, and I think it was on some recent book club, Reese's Book Club or Read with Jenna or something. So, you know, I bet it'll be fun. The most fun I've ever had, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
Cool.
Who knows?
So that means in 2 weeks on the podcast, I'll be reading The Most Fun We Ever Had by Claire Lombardo, and Toby's reading The Lathe of Heaven by Ursula K. Le Guin. So I'm just thinking of the title already. The most lathe we ever have. Anyway, thanks for listening to the To Read List. If you'd like to get in contact with us, you can email thetoreadlistpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Goodreads, Instagram, and the story at the To Read List podcast.
And if you want to help us out and find more listeners, a great way to do that is to leave a rating and review on your podcatcher of choice, particularly Apple Podcasts. You can write whatever you want there. You can write compliments to us, things you liked about the show, things about your father, Winston Churchill, and what he was doing in the bath, whatever you want.
And if you're in close proximity to your college rival and you're feeling feelings that you haven't felt in a long time spark up between you two, go ahead and go over there and tell him about our podcast. That's sure to turn up the heat and get things really going. Tell him or her or them that you just can't stop listening to this podcast. You should listen to it together in a steamy pile.
Just imagining like getting that call one day being like, who are you? Anyway, thanks to Toby and Andrew for co-hosting the podcast with me, to Dylan for sound recording, and to Miss Jillian Beth Durkee for composing our intro song. See you in 2 weeks. Happy reading.
Books.